The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in on this Wednesday. This is Tiffany substituting for the goddess herself, and you have tuned in to the right station. I would like to remind you that this is a live radio station, so you're able to call in. The number, in case you have forgotten, is 877-772-9658. You can also text us. That's the new line is 513-432-4961. And then as usual, you can send your emails. That is, if you're working or you're just too shy to have a conversation with us today, we promise we won't bite. But that email address is Vena, V-E-N-A, radio at gmail.com. Just a couple of housekeeping. So tonight is Wednesday. It is our Summit Help Night. It starts at 7:30 tonight. The topic will be implementing AI into your real estate business. It is free, free 99, open to the public. And you can get your Zoom link at Cincinnati Rea. That's Cincinnati REIA.com. So I'm super excited because what we're talking about today is affordable housing and the most misunderstood asset class in America. So I'm going to call it profit with a purpose. And so you hear everybody talking about housing prices are up, rents up, utilities are up, water is up, groceries is up, everything's up, right? So why is there a shortage of houses for so many millions of people? And here to talk with me today is my guest that is in studio, super excited, Mr. Mike Ely himself of NassauInvest.com. And just a little bit about Mike, and he can tell you more as we get started through the conversation today. But he is from Cincinnati, and he has built his reputation and portfolio from the ground up. He works on mixed use hotels, apartments, and he is the proud author of From Broke to Millions. I think that hashtag is You're Just One Deal Away. Welcome, Mike. How are you today?
What's up, Tiff? How you doing? How's everybody
Peachy in the King,
Cincinnati world here? What's
loving
going
it,
on?
Loving
Thanks
it.
For having me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you're here in person. Usually when I do this show, we're on the phone, right? So somebody's calling in and it makes it much more better when you're in person.
No, man, we got to do it in person.
I love it. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. So you, Mr. Ely, got started in affordable housing.
Yeah.
And we know there's demand and shortage, and there's an underserved market reality. So I heard you say something once, and you mentioned that demand alone doesn't create housing. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great demand for affordable housing. I mean, let's just talk about it for a second, because most people think they have this old stereotype that affordable housing is project-based, low-income, blighted areas, high crime, and it's not that, especially now. I mean, this is a mis-stereotype. Like, I bought an affordable housing deal out in Butler. It had a pickleball court.
Wow. Wow.
It had a pool.
Yeah.
That's not the typical. And so I say it's not a deal because it costs.
You know,
just because there's demand, it's not a deal. There's a cost. And, you know, ever since COVID, all kind of costs has risen by 30%.
At least.
Right. And on big numbers. Let's say your project was $100 million.
Yep.
Now it's $130 million.
Easily.
Okay, so if you were in for $1 million it was 1.3 and you were expecting only to make 1.4, it's not a feasible project
anymore. That's
right. You're going to spend 2-3 years building. And so, you know, there needs to be, well, they are, but there are incentives like low-income housing tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
There's low interest rate loans. And every city or county has something, or municipality has a low interest rate loan or kind of a trust for the group, you know, for the city. So that's what I mean. Like, it's just not a deal anymore just because of demand. You know, we have to help subsidize and incentivize with the current administration in office, like they're doing so many cutbacks, there's going to be an increase. And like, we're already short. The nation is short 7 million
at least
units.
At least. Yeah.
Cincinnati alone is 40,000.
And that's a lot in particular because our rental market is, the population is about 46-48% of rental, and there are people that are unaccounted for in that number.
Absolutely.
Now, you hit on a lot of things. You said pickleball. So that makes me think that you might already live next to an affordable housing facility and not even know it. I mean, like that pickleball, a pool, yeah, right? Like, so that's huge.
Yeah, it's not the typical way of things used to be, because like people used to think like, oh, it's going to bring my property mm-hmm. value down, and they would fight like Walmart coming into town, right? They were like straight take the gloves off, to wipe the lipstick off, and we going toe for toe. And it's not like that. But as soon as you say low income or affordable, people jump up in arms. And it's not like that anymore. So let me give you a little bit of a definition here. So the in Cincinnati, Hamilton County, Cincinnati alone, we have a population of 319,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
If you break that down, that goes about just a little over 150,000 households. I mean, I'm sorry, 150,000 households. The average household brings in $54,000 a year. Okay, that's the average. So if you use the housing expense ratio, that means the average rent that person could pay is $1,200.
Mm-hmm. But that's 80.
But the average rent in Cincinnati is $1,450.
And that's probably a low average. You looked at some of the new builds lately. Yeah. They're really extraordinarily high.
Exactly. They're 1824, 2600.
That's right.
But
that's
the
right.
average. So I'm just telling you, at 1450, they already in hold $250.
Mm-hmm.
Then that doesn't include groceries. That includes gas. That'll include if you want to send your kid to a private school. That's out of the question. And so my point is, it's not the average person is hurting now.
So you're talking about the working class.
It's the working class.
That's what we're
as
talking
well.
About. We're not talking about the standard person. We're talking about that.
Well, it's
the
all
everyday.
The classes now. Because some you'll hear workforce housing.
Oh yeah.
You'll
oh,
hear
yeah.
low income housing. They come up with a new name every year. I can't even keep up with
the nomenclature or something. I tell you, yes it is workforce housing. That's kind of my specialty with the shared housing thing. So
of course you're killing it.
That's right. So what you're talking about is where the emotions come in, because historically I would think, well, I don't know if I work every day that I want that in my backyard. So Nimmy, not in my backyard.
Yeah, I get it.
But then when you say pickleball, that brings a whole new perspective to what is actually affordable housing and what is not affordable housing. And so,
and yeah. Just to highlight more, so now when you get affordable housing, it's all about rent restrictions based off the AMI, American Median Income, in that area. So for example, let's say the rent restriction for two-bedroom and somebody is making $50,000 a year with a family of four, the most they could pay out of pocket is $1,200.
Should. Most they should.
Well, but that's the standard.
Yeah, because
you can't. And so if you want to get these incentives from the state, city, county, it can't go above that.
Okay.
And then if they say it's 50% or 30%, that just lowers the standards of what they can pay out of pocket. But then here's the thing people don't realize. You can, what they do, voucher stacking.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, for that 30%, the most they can pay is $300 out of pocket or $400 out of pocket or $500 out of pocket. But if they get a voucher from CMHA or Excel or whoever, and that voucher pays up to $1,200 and that $400 didn't come out of their personal pocket,
mm-hmm.
then you can charge that much even though that there's a rent restriction. So that's the I just dropped the gem right there.
Right there, that's golden.
Yep, like, because so many people avoid buying these properties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can't move the rents. You're right.
There's a way.
But you add a voucher
mm-hmm.
or you get a subsidy of some kind, you just killed
it. I was going to say, you just 1.5 plus more exit.
Yes.
At a minimum. Yeah, yes. If I do the math in my head. Yeah.
The math be mathing.
Yeah, that's what the kids say. Life be life, and the math be math. But that's the real math. So,
yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say, and for those of you who missed it, you know this replay is on the podcast. But that voucher stacking. So let's stay there for a second,
mm-hmm.
Because what I hear is opportunity segment.
Now, here's the thing about opportunities. They come dressed in overalls.
Mm-hmm.
They got dirt on it.
Mm-hmm.
In Chinese and Mandarin, opportunity is the same meaning as problem.
Okay.
And in problems, that's where the opportunity is. That's where the wealth is. That's where the magic is. So stop running away from problems. Things happen for you, not to you. Run towards your problems, not away from your problems.
There's a fix. There's a fix in it for sure. So then I'm hearing you say that the average small, I'll call it mom and pop is what you all often hear, boutique
mm-hmm.
Investor could look at this affordable housing as a actual strategy for 2026.
But they should. Mm. Here's the thing. 50% of the market is affordable housing, okay? But 90% of the investors go after market rate housing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 10%, only 10% of the investors are focused on affordable housing. There's a gap. Like you're in a field, a playing field, and nobody else is there.
There's a gap, but I would call that minimal competition. That's kind of a thing, you know. So, hey guys, this is going to be a great conversation. I can tell my director of the station is telling me that we need to take a break. So
already?
We're going. I know,
man.
Right? We're
going to.
I know. We're
going
to take
a break.
Y'all need
to call in here and protest.
Call in, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Stay with us. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I am the guest host, Tiffany Ray, and I am here with Mike Ely, and we were having a spirited conversation about affordable housing and why it is one of the most overlooked, it seems like, not only the misunderstood class in America. And we were talking about opportunity segments and investors in the community. And what we discovered is that maybe there's not so much emotions attached to it, that you might discover that you are already near an affordable housing unit with pickleball and a pool. not to mention, Mike dropped the gem about voucher stacking. And so I recently heard about a large facility that is being sold, and not to give a whole lot of details, but when we talk about opportunity segment, and it is in the affordable housing area, it made me think about a tenant cooperative, and the people could potentially merge together to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And all under the guise of affordable housing, because the person needed to get rid of some fund to pay down some funds. And
mm-hmm.
what I'm hearing you say is that this affordable housing model might really even outperform luxury houses in the future.
Well, because it's what we call what is it called when the market shifts? Recession proof. It's recession proof. I mean, when we go into a recession and you're doing these cutbacks,
mm-hmm.
typically the people in Class A, Class B can't afford it no more, so they go to Class B. Then Class B is like, oh man, I gotta go, and they go Class C. D and C ain't going nowhere,
right?
Because they rent ain't moving, and they getting subsidies. They ain't going nowhere, and that's why I say it now. Do they accelerate in value as quick as some of the other ones? I mean, you kind of weigh it out. But, like, I was a guy that started off in DNF neighborhoods. D stands for dang if you do, dang if you didn't. F stands, if you got an F, you are an F'd up, okay?
F.
And C is for cash flow. And since we're going on the scale, B is for both cash flow and appreciation, and A, properties are appreciation. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of great opportunities. And what people fail to realize, a lot of these properties, rents never got adjusted.
Right.
Because a lot of times these properties that are bought, they were done by nonprofit developers. Nonprofit, meaning... Meaning they didn't.
No, not you. I'm saying they had to keep lids on. I'm animated. You'll get used to me.
I was like, shit, you too loud.
No, no, not at all.
No, so they kept the rents down because that wasn't their purpose. Their purpose was to provide quality housing that people can afford. And so they never raised the rent. So, I mean, think about it. You come in, first of all, you buy it. The rents were never raised. I mean, and so just to give you an idea. I was just talking about this rent the other day. You can't have 2018 rents and manage on 2026 expenses. It just don't work like that. But regardless with this affordable housing, these people had a purpose, and they never increased the rent. There's room to push the value. You got to realize, for just show you $50.
Okay.
Let's talk a $50 increase.
Okay.
$50 times 100 units, right? That's $5,000 more a month.
Yep.
5,000 times 12, the annual, that's 60,000 more a year. You divide that by a six cap, you just created $1 million in value.
Yeah. With one short swing of the pen. Because
yes, a pen. All not, you did, just like, yeah, I need a million. You went in and created a, just signed a document. It's like, your rent is $50.
Right. And it's breathable and it's acceptable. I could live there. People would be okay with that.
Can you imagine there's units that haven't been increased in years, and there's a $300, $600, $700 rent bump?
Yes, I've seen some of that. I know people that have experienced that.
Yeah. Well, and so the landlord, you know, the new buyer, you know, that we talk about, they get... they turn into a villain because of that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but seriously, like, do you have another way? Like, what happens is the tenant feels abandoned. They don't feel like they're heard, and they're not included in the process, and so they're unaware. And what happens is they never got a chance to pull the curtain. You see what's behind the curtain. And what they really did, they never got a chance to see what's on that spreadsheet. That spreadsheet showed the rents, the water bill went up, the gas and electric went up, taxes went up, all these things went up. And so now you got to increase it. Or you listeners, you tell me, should the landlord be responsible for this?
Well,
or
well,
should
so,
you increase the rent?
Right, but there's a way to include people. In that, so when you make an adjustment, it's a information notice, and you can tell them some of the things. To quote Mr. Landlord Jeffrey Taylor, he would say, "Good news, you know, the water went up, the electric went up, the insurance went up, the these went up, but I'm only increasing your rent by $50." So there's a wonderful way.
That's a presentation.
Of imposing this on somebody and making them understand what is happening. I see you on the phone, Russ. We're going to take your call in just a second. I have to. So we have this thing in Cincinnati, in RIA. I'm not going to say Cincinnati RIA because we're collective now. But in RIA, what we call this thing is a jargon flag. You didn't do jargon on the voucher stack, but we call our tenants, we call our landlords. Now I'm having a brain fart. I'm a housing provider. So we renamed ourselves, that nomenclature you're talking about. and our tenants are residents. So
100.
Pushing that, and not say narrative in a bad way, also makes them feel a little bit more responsible. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it helps with nomenclature. Are you ready to take a phone call?
Let's do it.
Hey, here. Russ. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Howdy. Okay. How are you?
I'm great. Just digging from the blizzard. Yeah, but it was only 8 inches here.
Oh, how many? Well, you're Connecticut, so you got some. Yes. Did you guys get that foot of snow last night or something? A foot, was it?
No, it was 8 inches for us, but over in
close enough.
Providence was 37 inches.
Oh, that's just that's.
Why wasn't I there?
There's something very wrong with that, but. But I feel for you. Make sure you take some aspirin when you're doing that shoveling. What's your question for us today?
So I have two questions. Okay. Thank you for pointing up at 7 million. Hearing that New York City alone, if it was zone variances, were just rezoned, they have over 500,000. And do you see also just 500,000 units alone, and plus also some retail commercial conversion? As more of them go through lease changes, do you see that possibility there? That's the first question.
Mm-hmm.
And what other opportunities in creating more affordable supply?
Right. So your question is really about conversion. You want to take that?
Conversion and just like zone variance changes, ooh, like in air rights and that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Let's talk about the zoning first, and I'll give Mike a moment to collect his stuff on the lease, because I think that's a larger topic. But if you've been paying attention to the industry a lot, then you're seeing larger states starting to rezone because they understand that that is an underutilized tutelage. And so, mm-hmm. for example, in the city of Nice, in up by Connecticut where you are in New York, Nice, they actually just changed some zoning to allow auxiliary dwelling units with some really neat features to it that allow multiple people in a space where there were only 2 to 3. So people are embracing this. I've seen that happen in Dallas, Texas. I've seen it happen in Houston, Texas. I've seen it happen in California. California.
Is this kind of similar to AUD?
That's right. Okay. Auxiliary dwelling units.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're utilizing that because we know that they're underutilized properties, and mm-hmm. people have all this space, and they have garages that they don't use other areas to help people be able to build more affordable housing.
So, you know, that all kicked, well, I ain't gonna say it started in California, but a lot of that was mm-hmm. where a lot of that really kicked
mm-hmm.
off with.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, in Florida, they start doubling down on the density.
Okay.
If you committed to doing some affordable housing, they mm-hmm. will allow you, because you were talking about air rights, and so down in Florida, they say TDR, terminates in density rights,
okay.
which is condo rights, air rights.
Mm-hmm.
What's really happening, they double down. And so instead of like only having a right to build one condo unit, they let you mm-hmm. do two now. If you promise to keep, I don't know, I think it was 15%. It's about 15% affordable. So, you're going to see a lot more of that, because it's not just at the governor level. Multiple mayors across the U.S. are looking for mm-hmm. public-private partnerships, and you're mm-hmm. going to see a lot more of that happening.
Okay.
So
my second question.
So, Russ, that was the piece about zoning. Did you get the question about the commercial transition? I think there was something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Office and retail, especially mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. leases change, leases come up for renewal and what happens with that.
Yeah. So now I really saw this in New York years ago. My wife, she was living and working in New York, and we were coming to the city, and you would see mm-hmm. all these buildings that got converted. They were commercial mm-hmm. all office,
mm-hmm.
and I don't really know what happened, but I just noticed like the first floor was retail, maybe a restaurant mm-hmm. or a bar. Then the next floor was something else. Then they all were like apartment, condo, hotel, mm-hmm. office shared space. And I think you're going to see more of that. You'll see some conversions, but the costs are still high. Some of these properties, depending on how they were built, they're challenging right. to convert into apartments. Some yeah, of these spaces, yeah. I've noticed, instead of, you know, thinking that they would do affordable housing or something like that, they're actually mm-hmm. filling it in with more concrete
mm-hmm.
so they can do more storage or warehouse spacing for flex spacing.
I think the flex spacing is a good look. And so this is what I'm going to throw out there, not to hijack it from affordable housing, because I also think this is in the mm-hmm. same vein. But when you talk about those challenges with the buildings to make good use of apartments. Here again, I'm going to go back to my baby right now. That's 100% all things shared housing. So when I say that, think of, as we talked about earlier, workforce housing, dormitory style living, micro apartments where, you know, when you go to IKEA, if you have an IKEA, you have mm-hmm. a room that's about 225 square feet and everything's mm-hmm. in it. The little kitchen, the little bed, the little thing that's
yeah.
self-contained. So where there's an issue making apartments, the density might allow for that type of micro living, 100%. Which would make it also probably more affordable.
100%. Except yeah. in New York. I just watched the standard room now is a minimum size room. I think it's 80 square feet.
Yeah.
Like it's a
like
closet.
Right.
It's
right.
a walk-in closet, but that's not it. And then the bathroom is in the hallway, like 2-3 doors down.
Yeah, dormitory style.
Oh my god,
living. And that's I hate to say it, guys, but I'm telling you, prediction. We'll come back here in 5 years, and you'll be like, that Tiffany lady said that it's coming to it. Are we ready for a break? I think our guy's telling us.
I have a second question.
Go
too.
For it. Yep.
Okay, so with global supply challenges of materials and labor supply, how do we? I guess. How's one overcome? Can that could get overcome as part of a because that's leading many to the developers to say only go luxury.
I mean, the only way to help this right now is some subsidies or incentives, or he has to take these tariffs away.
Mm-hmm.
Santos down in the Santos down in Florida. You know, they were removing aliens, immigration, and pushing mm-hmm. people out with tariffs, and people start building. Now he's actually funding to bring some of these people back because a lot of them worked in the hospitality industry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them did construction, mm-hmm. and now they don't have it. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we just when we thought we were settling in, he the other day
something
hits
happened.
A 10% additional
yep.
global tax.
Yep.
So... I'm not, you know, because before they were cutting off just certain people, we were like, okay, well, you know what? We'll ship it to Bolivia, and then from Bolivia come to, you know, to Ohio, and that's not happening. There ain't no way around it.
I think that one's going to be the conundrum of the day. I mean, you know, and of course I have a dry sense of humor, but I was just going to say duct tape and glue. Like, you know,
yeah,
we better start yeah. using some super glue. Like, I mean, I'm trying to be funny and make light of it, but that
yeah.
is a very tough question. And I think I agree with Mike in that I think it's a wait and see.
Yeah.
So was that it for you, Russ? I appreciate
yeah,
you
I
always rocking with me and calling in and bringing some meat and potatoes to the call. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And with that, guys,
yeah.
we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing. I am your guest host, Tiffany Ray, and I'm here with Mike Ely, and we're talking about affordable housing, profit with a purpose. And I just a couple of things that I failed to mention the last time. So you guys know we're coming up on our in-person meeting. That's going to be the March the 5th. The early meeting is going to be focusing on how to get started making money in rentals. And then the main meeting, which I believe is hosted by Vina herself, is going to be the 2026 Buy Box, what active investors are buying today. So we hope you join us. You can get your free ticket at Cincinnati REIA, that's CincinnatiREIA.com. And then that same meeting meeting is going to be on March the 3rd with our partners in CoRe, and that's CoRe, C-O-R-E-E, rocks with an S, .com. A reminder, 7:30 tonight, the Summit Help Night. Go on and grab your tickets. That's where you get real help and real advice from real experts. And then we have our office hours tomorrow. So plenty of opportunities to make sure that you get this thing right. So, guys, if you haven't connected with us, go on to CincinnatiRIA.com and see what's out there on our calendar and grab yourself a ticket. So we've talked about a lot of things today, but two things I really want to make sure we get before we get off the
You got your eye on that.
I know, right? This Instagram thing, this sexy on Instagram thing, where you see all the people ribbon cutting and all that stuff. But I think the development is the hard part. So tell me, what do you think what people don't see in all the pomps and ribbon cutting,
celebratory. So that development is a different beast. So there's pluses and minuses with that. I say this because we're RIA, right? And some of us are starting or have done a couple of deals. All I say is this. One, it's great to have developments. They transform neighborhoods without the developers. But if you're looking to do development, partner with somebody that already has experience and done some of the things. Because I know a lot of times, as soon as we get started, like, oh, I want to do a development. No, you don't. You will inherit a headache. You'll learn about what uncomfortable is really about. Uncomfortable, if nobody really told you, is pain.
it could be.
And here, understand this: most affordable housing deals, the money is not made. You think you're buying this or building this to make money and start cash flowing. Some of these deals don't even cash flow for the first 3 to 6 years or even longer.
But it's still an asset and an investment.
Yes. But do you want to work for free?
That's volunteering.
But now with affordable housing, though, there is where they get a developer's fee. Okay. And that's where they make their money. And developers make their money by building, and they get to pull a fee off of it for the first couple of years, but it doesn't typically cash flow. Most developments are long-term game.
Okay, so I heard you say something. I heard you say uncomfortable and pain. So where's the risk? Is the risk in the construction? Is it in the financing? Is it in the...
All of the above.
Is it in the government approach? Everything. Is it in the...
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Development is amazing. It's sexy. You'd be like, let's do it. But what people don't realize, man, when the market changed, it's a wrap. Like, I was on a $130 million. First of all, when I first started the project, it was a $100 million project. And then we were going to make $30 million. Yeah, after COVID, the price went up to $130 million. I was like, well, how? And I'm already in. I'm locked in. What, I'm just going to walk away? So then you had to be creative. And so markets shift. And it's out of control. Interest rates shot up. We were at at the time, rates were like 2, 3%. But for construction, they're always like 2 or 3% higher. So I was looking at a 6%. Rates jumped all the way up to 14%. I was like, I'm not building. We just have to wait it out. The construction costs. So my point is, I'm not saying not to build.
Right.
But be aware that construction, like a lot of people, like if I had to do it again, I would only partner with family offices, deep pockets. And I would leverage their skill set. I would not put my money at risk again, although it'll be very beneficial. But, like, one deal could sink you because, like, developments, they suck money. You got to realize for 2-3 years, you will not get paid.
So I'm hearing you say that the risk factor is the construction, because you have, again, the materials, the labor, the interest rate,
yeah.
the financing. So do
changes.
It with a partnership, maybe yeah. not do it alone. So that's what a collective is all about. And then what about the government approach? Like, doesn't the city?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's
or a state?
That's what helps you with your risk. So if you do go over the hurdle, you say, Mike, Tiff, I'm doing this development. Well, go get some incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Go get some subsidies. I don't care from the state, the county, or the city. Make sure you get a tax abatement.
Mm-hmm.
A tax abatement allows you to reduce your taxes. Now, I shared with you earlier what $50 does.
That's right. That's right.
Can you imagine not paying thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands a year, how much value that will create for your property?
Yeah, and you do that because of the tax incentive.
There you
go. The abatement.
So that creates a value. If you had to stick with that same value, you end up paying like $100,000 in taxes that year, you just lost $6 million in value.
That hard pill to swallow.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't care if you're playing small or big.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, here's the great thing. If you guys are in the city of Cincinnati, I still encourage you to file tax abatements or do entity transfers when you acquire real estate now. You can use that now to help control your costs. For example, it's a simple form. For those you're doing a single family to a four family, after you do the renovations, and you have to pull permits though, you can go down to the city, tell them everything you spent on the document.
Mm-hmm.
They will base the taxes based off of what you purchase, not the value. Okay, you'd be like, well, Mike, what's the difference here? For example, I bought a 19 unit on McMicken.
Mm-hmm.
Now I do a shared housing, sober living.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought it so cheap. It's frightening how cheap. But just to say, I got it so cheap, I had to tell them I paid $60,000 for it.
Nice.
But I got it cheaper than that. But my point is, typically, once I dispute that, it stays for 3 years. Well, they bump my taxes up.
Of course.
In a shorter period of time. So my taxes should only stay at $60,000. It went to $250,000. Now, the crazy thing, that was still a blessing because it really should have been based off of $800,000 or $1 million. But it messed up my cash flow. I only rented to this guy for like 6 years at a certain amount a month.
Mm-hmm.
Where the taxes jumped up to $8,000 a year. I was losing $1,500 a month
mm-hmm.
in revenue. I mean, I'm still profiting, but I was losing revenue all because I didn't have a tax abatement.
Yeah, I hear that the tax abatement is severely underutilized, not
100%.
Just here in our city, but in most places, and it's a very simple.
And that's the easiest one you can mm-hmm. do. I mean, there's low interest rate loans. There's TIFs, tax increment financing. There's I want to say NABHU, but it's not that. There's some other loan that they have in the city. They give like a $400,000 grant.
Oh, the NOFA?
The NOFA.
NOFA, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's low-income housing tax credits, which they will fund up to 30% of construction. Or if you include the acquisition in it, they'll fund up to 30% of your deal, forgivable money.
Wow, that's huge. And so what I'm really hearing is that in this affordable housing, it is profit with purpose because
it's
a win-win-win. The resident wins, the city wins because they get the more housing. And it sounds like the investor, we win.
And what did you call yourself? You're the resident, right?
Resident. Mm-hmm.
And so what you have to realize, I want you to make as much money as possible. But what I want you to remember is you're not buying real estate for profit. You're actually buying real estate to provide value, to provide a service. You're creating a space where people create memories.
That's right.
Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Holidays, birthdays, grandma's 85th, 90th, or 100th birthday. These are places that you're creating. And when you serve people at the highest level like this, people will rent for you forever. They have no problem throwing you money because really, when you buy real estate, it's like the tenant gave you their credit card. to go buy whatever you want, and then they pay it down for you. Isn't that crazy?
That's kind of how it works.
They're giving you principal reduction so you can go spend that card again. So provide the best value always. Make sure you got the maintenance guy. And then also one thing people don't talk about with affordable housing, there's programming. Do you realize there's sponsorship and there's money that these certain banks have to spend with in the community and bring certain clients of affordable housing? And they will pay you to create programming to teach them financial literacy.
Mm-hmm.
If you got mental health, you can create programming around mental health. I know you're really aware of these. And even substance abuse.
Yeah.
Like, I get paid to house people.
That's huge. Right. I would call those wraparound services.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
It's just wraparound services, and they do exist. So
there's plenty of profit with a purpose. You just got to serve. You got to be the Excedrin to people's migraine.
Yeah.
I like to say, excuse me, but bring a solution-driven gun and shoot them right in between the eyes with value. And when you do that, that's when your profit increase infinitely.
I love it. And we are in the business of solving problems.
That's it.
That's exactly what real estate is all about. So I heard a lot of scary stuff. So for those folks out there that didn't call in and we're talking about affordable housing, it's doable though. That's what I'm hearing. And what I really hear from you is understand the program, but most of all, know your numbers.
Because that's
what I'm hearing. We're talking about the fluctuation and pricing and all these things, but the program is something you can learn, but you have to understand and know the numbers so you can know how to move.
Even down to your construction, don't trust people. And with ChatGPT, there's no reason why you don't know numbers anymore. When I go in, when you estimate, they kind of, I forgot what they call it. Not a batch, but a link. Like when you have a toilet. Man, I know my toilet is 100. If I want a nice one, it's 250.
Right.
I know if I want a plumbing line or a supply line, that's $6. I know I need a glaze. I like to call them the donuts. I know that's another $6, right? And then I know I got to pay $50, $75. I know what that costs. I know that I'm paying for every linear foot, I'm paying $300 for upper and lower cabinets. And then $50 for labor. You know, so like know your numbers like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like clockwork, you can estimate with no problem. And then you don't have to take any contractor to try to take your head off.
Right, take you up top. That's
because them contractors are different.
They are an artistic bunch.
Hey, man, my buddy, hey, he's still
That's what we'll call them.
My buddy, even to this day, I was like, hey, man, I need him to change the door. Install a new door. He installed a door on an exterior door, and he put the hinges on the outside of the door. Now, some of you people are like, well, what's that? The hinges where you can knock that pin out.
I know.
And get in.
Right.
But he put it on the outside.
Nope.
And then he says, well, it wasn't in the contract.
But you were supposed to pay me for that. What I'm going to say to that is common sense is just not so common. So, and that is a reality. So,
I still love him today.
It's okay. He didn't have enough coffee. So we'll say. So what I did hear you say is that even if you are a smaller investor, you can participate in this. But if somebody wanted to get started today,
mm-hmm.
what is the one thing you would tell them to learn first?
Man, first, I know some people will question this, but I would say get your mindset right.
Mm-hmm. That's
get
huge.
Your vision.
Ooh.
You know, pray, meditate, visualize on what you want. Get clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't have clarity, it's like driving in the fog and you turn the high beams on and then you can't see. So what you're going to do, you're just going to pull over. Most people get stuck because not that they're not capable, they just don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so you got to be very intentional. And so once you do that, you got the vision, you meditate, you prayed on it, then take action. But don't let your emotions dictate your motion.
Mm-hmm.
See, most people let their feelings dictate their behavior, which creates their identity. Their identity should create their behavior, which then will create a feeling.
Okay, so if you guys didn't write that down, I think he said, don't let your emotions dictate your motion. And we have to set intention towards the project that we're working with. And then he said the thing about mindset. Guys, I don't know how ever else we could end a segment unless there is something else, Mr. Mike Ealy, that you want to leave them with, because that was just like mic drop right there.
Mic drop.
Yeah, you got it.
No, I mean, but listen, I've been to the future and back. Practice your future in the present.
Yes.
Your past doesn't dictate your future. And failure is not the opposite of success. It's a linear process. And so whatever it is that you want, you can have it, but you have to take action.
That's it.
And the magic is what you're avoiding. Remember I said, don't run away from your problems. Run towards your problems. And you'll end up doing more in 90 days than most people do in a lifetime.
I love that. I like to thank you guys for listening and rocking with us today. And Mr. Mike Ealy, I think you're Mike Ealy at, is it NassauInvest.com? Is that you?
Yeah, you can catch me on Instagram, Mike Ealy Nassau. Catch me there, or NassauInvest.com. Yeah, so just catch me there. Always sharing free gems.
Oh, yeah.
Always giving free information, because I just want you to win. Hey, listen, some people are like, I failed, I lost. No, there's a blessing in the lesson. We either winning or we winning.
That's it. I love it. And with that, we're going to call it a day. Thank you guys for rocking with us. This is Real Live Real Estate Investing, and happy investing. Take care.